Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, August 16th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Fede Alvarez's new movie, Alien Romulus. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editors Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
And Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, so as we do with these Friday episodes, let's kick things off with some general spoiler-free thoughts here. In the interest of time, Chris, I won't ask you to repeat your broad reaction to this movie since you got into that a couple days ago, but you'll definitely have time to dig into some specifics as we go along here. But I guess, BJ, let's start with you first. What did you think about Alien Romulus?
I had a lot of fun with this movie. I mean, there's definitely stuff that I have my nitpicks about, but ultimately, I had a great time at the movies. I thought Fede incorporating some of the more traditional horror elements compared to what I would say the prequel series does a lot more like philosophically terrifying horror elements was, you know, a nice return to form, so to speak. I think that the night I saw it, I was like, this might be like my third or fourth favorite. I don't think that that's true because I did see it again. And I think I've softened a bit. I'm less hype about it as I was upon first viewing. So I'm curious to see how this movie is going to play upon, you know, additional watches for other people.
Okay. Brad, what did you think about it?
I really dug this movie, too, for the most part. Like BJ, I also have some qualms and I have also seen it twice. And I think more than anything, it's thoroughly entertaining and it's a lot of fun to watch, even if it doesn't have the same narrative depth or unique perspective that a lot of the other Alien movies bring to the table. This one's pretty surface level, although I do think that there's one particular relationship and character dynamic that actually works really well as kind of like a new, unique approach to something familiar in the Alien franchise. And I'll talk about that as we dig more into spoilers, but I just think that this movie looks really good too. You know, the way he uses darkness and also the way he uses sound and the lack of sound is incredibly well done as well. So there's a lot to love about this movie, even though it does have some frustrating shortcomings, but overall I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. There are several things about this movie that I just think straight up do not work, but there's also enough pretty great stuff in here that I found myself feeling pretty won over by the movie. I think the iconography in the Alien franchise is just so strong that even though some of the stuff did feel familiar, as somebody who is not super invested in these movies, and like I said yesterday, I haven't even seen all of them, I personally didn't really think that that familiarity was a bad thing this time around. I thought there were some really, really tense sequences that were super effective, and it got pretty creative with some of the set pieces, which I really appreciated. And I love that this movie continues the Alien franchise's utter contempt for the soulless nature of corporations. That's just always fun to see. So actually, I'll open it up to Chris to address you first here. You mentioned some of the things that didn't really work for you. Is there one thing that you can think of that does work for you? Let's kick things off with a positive note here.
I mean, yeah, it looks good. It's a well-produced film. It's got a really nice atmosphere to it. I really like actually the opening scenes on the mining planet, which are just like depressing and bleak and rainy. I thought that does a really good job of like setting the mood. You know, there's little touches I like, but I don't want to, I mean, you're asking me for positive. I'm like instantly launching into the negatives here. I don't know.
Well, that's honestly good. Let me just say that I agree with you that the beginning of the movie, especially that setting where the sun never rises on that dark planet, I just thought it was like very evocative, super well done. The whole thing with Rain finding out that she has to work many more years because Weyland-Yutani just arbitrarily moves the goalposts on her, that felt like really relatable and like a nice catalyst for the story. So I loved, and also the way the movie kind of takes its time before it gets into any of the scary stuff. That seems like something that modern movies don't do anymore. It seems like every movie, every horror movie these days has to like start with a bang in some way. And this movie kind of ramps up to the scary stuff. So I appreciated all that. I don't know if BJ and Brad, if you have any thoughts on the way the movie opened.
Yeah, I really like it, especially because I think we're so used to not seeing as much of the other worlds in the franchise outside of ones that are like directly connected to, you know,
whoever we're following at the time. Like, we even get a little bit of like the dream that she has of her planet that she wants to go to. This is Rain Guardian I'm talking about here. And I like that. I thought that was like a very interesting way to open this, as a reminder that like, as much as it is spacey and often on, you know, space ships and space stations, that there is still entire communities and worlds that we don't often get to look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I'm trying to decide how to do this. I think let's just go ahead and say, let's get into spoilers, right? Like, that way we can talk more about specifics and things that take place after the first, whatever, 10 or 15 minutes of the movie. So spoilers for Alien Romulus starting right now. Chris, I feel like I cut you off there. So go ahead and launch into whatever you were going to launch into, and we'll circle back around.
No, you know, I've sort of soured on the movie even more than I was when I saw it. Like, the more I've sat with it, the less I like it. I don't want to give the impression that it's like terrible. I don't think it's like an abomination or anything like that. It's the least interesting Alien movie, and that's really my biggest problem with it. The risk of repeating myself based on what we've done on other podcasts this week. What I really like about this franchise is that the films all sort of stand on their own. No two films are different. Like, even Alien and Aliens, which I think everyone, not everyone, but most people would agree are like the pinnacle of this franchise. Those are two very different movies. And then Alien 3 is different. And Alien 4, even if you don't like it, you have to admit it's a really different movie. It's a really strange movie. And, you know, Prometheus and Covenant, those movies are directly connected, and even those two movies are very different from one another. And I really appreciate that. And it just kind of bums me out that this movie is so devoted to being like, remember this from the other movies. And it's just really like everyone loves Aliens. Aliens is not filled with characters referencing stuff from the first movie. Like, it's like they don't repeat dialogue from the first movie. It's just like, it's just very strange to me that this movie is so devoted to like nudging you in the ribs and being like, remember this from that movie, or remember like characters. Like, I said this the other day on a different podcast, but it literally feels like these people watch the other Alien movies and they're quoting it. And it's just like, it's really, it just does not, it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. But even if you want to like overlook that and you want to take the movie on its own terms, I don't find it particularly effective. There are some really good, like, gross out moments in this, especially like I do really like, which we'll get to, the whole third act. I don't want to call it a twist, but like what happens in the third act. But for the most part, this movie feels very video gamey to me. And, you know, I'm not here to badmouth video games, but I don't want a video game when I see a movie. I want a movie. And so much of this movie is devoted to the characters being like, we have to get from point A to point B and avoid these traps. And it just felt very video gamey to me. And that bugged me as well. Like, I don't know. I don't know. The more I sit with this, the less I like it, which bums me out because I really wanted to like this because I love the Alien franchise, and I thought the trailers looked really cool, and I was really all in on this, and then I saw it and I was just like, well, that was not for me.
I mean, I get what you're saying with the video game thing. I actually think that worked really well for this movie, though. Like, I liked the set pieces. There are two big ones that I wanted to call out, like the silently walk through a room of facehuggers. That feels very video gamey to me, but it also was like one of my favorite sequences in this whole movie. And then also the dodge alien blood in zero G thing at the end. Like, that also feels, yeah, a little, I don't know, game-ish or something. But, like, it was just so creative and fun and interesting that I was, like, very, I don't know, I was tickled by that. So I guess it's just a matter of, like, whether or not you look at that as a positive or a negative in this context. But, I don't know. I wondered if BJ or Brad, if you had any thoughts about any of the stuff Chris was saying or those scenes that I mentioned.
No, I'm perfectly fine with those because I agree with you. I think that that sequence with the facehuggers and, you know, making the temperature in the room the same as body temperature so they can't see them and trying to quietly make it away across is a very suspenseful sequence that's pulled off very well. I also think that the acid blood zero-G sequence towards the end is pretty cool. And for me, like, I agree with Chris that there's a certain feeling of member berries about this movie, and it has a very Force Awakens vibe to it. But I'm also somewhat forgiving of that, because I think it's easy for us to forget that even though Alien is a classic and it's very much still a part of like pop culture conversation today, that movie's 45 years old now. And so like, this is something that gives fans something familiar, gives audiences something that might be new to them if they're not super familiar with the old Alien movies, while still building upon the mythology and also allowing the franchise to go in an entirely new direction, because they can't do anything with Ripley anymore. Sigourney Weaver has like said she's done. This gives us something where we have a character who's different enough from Ripley, but still has some of like similar traits and has a compelling new relationship dynamic with a great character that I'm talking. You have Rain as the kind of like the Ripley proxy, if that's how you want to put it. But then Andy as this great android character, and the relationship they have for me is the driving force of the movie and the most interesting part about it, especially with how Andy is portrayed as this kind of android who almost acts like he's on the spectrum, because and then shifts into a more sinister android when he has his chip modified. And the way that their relationship plays out because of that, I think, is the most compelling part of this movie. And it works well with the familiar of the formula that comes from Alien and a little bit from Alien. So like, I wasn't super bothered by that, because I can understand why you'd want something more fresh and more interesting, because of how there are so many different dynamic narrative choices made across the Alien franchise that you would want something under the hood that feels a little more significant and interesting. But I feel like there's also room to like do that as we go on. And like I said, I walked away feeling very satisfied with what I got, especially because of how gnarly and weird the third act gets.
Mm. What do you think, BJ?
So this is going to be a weird related tangent. I promise it's related, but I feel like Alien Romulus and where this franchise is reminds me a lot of the two big, I guess, like discourse issues that happen with both the Resident Evil franchise and the Chucky franchise. And what I mean by that is that in both cases, those franchises have like different blocks, so to speak. Like with Alien, it's like Alien and Aliens, that's one block. Three and Resurrection is another block. The prequel films, that's another block. Then you also have the video games as a block. And then you have the comics, and that's a block. And so you have so many different people who are interacting and loving this franchise that are coming from different blocks, depending on what they like, what they are looking for in an Alien film. And so then it kind of sets a movie up for like Alien Romulus up to fail, because this movie is going to disappoint one of those blocks, if not all of them, if it focuses on just, you know, catering to one block. Mm-hmm. And this movie is clearly trying to appease all of those blocks in some way, shape, or form. Either it's referencing something from one block while taking a thematic, you know, connection to another, or a tonal connection to another. And so it ends up, you know, kind of feeling like a grab bag of greatest hits. But at the same time, like, I truly don't know, like, what the answer would be to, like, make this win, because what I would want out of an Alien movie is probably going to be different than what Chris wants, is going to be different than what Brad wants. And so, you know, it's complicated and it's difficult. And, you know, I commend, you know, Fede Alvarez and the team for trying to appease all the blocks. But I feel like that last third act, which is so awesome and is absolutely my favorite part of the movie outside of Rain and Andy, which I agree that is like the emotional core, and I love those characters and I would love to see those characters come back in some capacity. But if not, I want them to go full steam ahead with that third act, because that is so weird and gross and awesome. And I wish the movie had been all of that. But I also don't know how people would have responded if that would have been the movie and it didn't have all the other stuff. I feel like I feel like a lot of people would have rejected it like really quick.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I also loved the Rain and Andy relationship. I thought that was enough for me to latch on to, even when some of the other characters were pretty forgettable. But I thought Kaylee Spaney and David Johnson were really dialed into the right kind of sort of familial chemistry. And watching this movie made me pretty excited to see what they'll do next, even though, as Chris noted in his review, that Rain isn't really much of a character. She's kind of Kaylee Spaney is a little hung out to dry, because Rain doesn't really have a ton to work with, and it wasn't super noticeable to me in the moment, but when I reflect back on the movie afterward, it sort of becomes obvious to me that there just wasn't much going on with that character. But Chris, I want to hear what you think about the dynamic between those two characters, and then we can get into some more stuff about the ending.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I genuinely worry there's something like wrong with me. I don't know. I keep watching movies that people recommend, and I'm not getting what they're recommending, and I'm genuinely worried that like there's something like deeply broken in me, because I did not care about their relationship at all. Like, I didn't care. I don't think they're bad performances. I especially think his name's David Johnson.
Yeah,
David Johnson. He is really. I think he's the best part of the whole movie. He's he's giving a really. It's like a tricky performance, and he's really nailing it. So I did not really buy into their dynamic. I think it's because they spend. I don't know. They're so. At odds for like the majority of the movie. I feel like I needed more of them connecting, because he spends, you know, the majority of the movie with the chip in his head, and he's sort of like bordering on being an antagonist in a way. And I feel like if I had got a little bit more of their relationship before that, I would have liked it a bit more. I don't know. Or maybe there's just something very wrong with me. I don't know.
Okay, fair enough. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about the rest of the movie. So we have to talk about the inclusion of Rook as a character and the digital recreation of Ian Holm. I thought this was just a gigantic mistake, and
it's so bad.
I didn't find it cool. I didn't find it narratively interesting. I just felt completely distracted every single time that character was on screen, and like it didn't look particularly great to me. Does anyone here have any, even in like a devil's advocate kind of way, any potential positives about the inclusion of that character in the way that he was used in this movie?
So the thing that I've been struggling with is that thematically and like story wise, it makes total sense to me for this character to be here, like, and specifically to be a model based on Ian Holmes's Ash. Like, that makes sense to me. I understand it. However, there were so many ways you could have gotten that same execution that would have been exciting, that would have been cool, without having to artificially resurrect a corpse. Like,
yeah,
it just feels so ghastly to me. And it's so frustrating, because in theory, on paper, I love this, but in execution, I hate it.
What were you gonna say, Brad?
I think that I agree with BJ. There's a way this works in this movie, and I think that they could have even done it while still like using like a recreation of Ian Holm, just much more sparingly and in a much different way, so that you didn't need that photorealistic face. Because the way that they pulled off the visual effects for this, which feels like a combination of an animatronic on set overlaid with some kind of digital effect that feels like a bad deepfake, because the mouth is the worst part. The way it moves feels like it's just pasted on top of something that already existed, and it's just very poorly done. There are only like a couple shots where I felt like it was convincing. And I've talked to a couple of people who are like, well, I didn't mind it because it's almost like he's glitching because he's trying to point. It's like, no, it doesn't look good enough to resemble what Ash looked like when he was glitching, when he got his head torn off in the original Alien. They try to make it still look like realistic human movement, and it doesn't work in this capacity. And I think what you could have done easily is just totally scorched that android and made it so that the face is nearly unrecognizable except for a small part of it, so that you didn't need his whole face. And you could have still revealed through a security badge or like some kind of footage on the ship that it was at one point, you know, actually a different version of Ash as Rook. And so I just don't know like what the thought process was here and why they had to make it so prominent. It was almost like that they wanted to show off. They were like, hey, look what we can do. And it's like, no one cares, you know?
Yeah. And they're just still not there yet. It just doesn't look good. But I don't know, Chris, I assume you hated this as much as the rest of us, but
it's awful. And honestly, even if they had like 100% pulled it off and like made it look perfect, it would still just be, it's just gross. Like, can we stop doing this? Like,
yeah, I agree.
I'm not completely against like digital face swapping if the actor is alive and the actor is okay with it. Like I love The Irishman. I think The Irishman is a masterpiece, and the effects in that do not bother me. And even though I think the effects in that upcoming Robert Zemeckis movie. What's it called? Like, any, what the hell is that called?
Here, I think.
Here. Yeah. Like, they don't look great. I'm okay with it because everyone in that movie is alive. they're all signing off on it. And even if you want to say that, like, they got Ian Holm's family's permission to do this, it just feels weird.
It's different. Yeah.
Just don't bring a dead person back. It's really weird. It just makes me uncomfortable. Like, we do not need to be doing this.
No. And like, the other thing too is like, a lot of people have been saying, like, oh, the family did sign off on it. And it's like, do you know how many families would sign off on the most grotesque thing for their dead famous relatives? Like, we have laws in place for this sort of behavior. And like, we just haven't caught up to like digital stuff yet, which is just so frustrating. And also, I mentioned this on, other conversations I've put in articles. It bothers me that the character's name is Rook and he doesn't look like Bishop. Like, if you're going to do names that sound similar, then Lance Henriksen is still alive. Ask for his permission. Then, like, it's way less weird and creepy. It also makes more sense with the name that you've chosen. That's a small nitpick. But, like,
yeah.
Just make it, like, I agree with Brad. Burn the face off. Make it look kind of Terminator-y and everyone's happy.
Well, I think this is maybe a natural transition into one of the other big boneheaded moves, which is the get away from her, you bitch line, which I just found like completely embarrassing. And this is what Chris was talking about when I didn't really know what he meant on Wednesday when he was like, it sounds like some characters have seen these movies and are quoting them back to us, basically. And I can't believe that this made it through. Like, I can maybe understand shooting this on the day or something, but like in the post process, I just cannot fathom how Fede Alvarez and his team like signed off on this making it into the final cut of this movie. It just is so glaring and it sticks out like a sore thumb. I just thought it was awful.
I have a theory about this.
I'm gonna let you do your theory, and I wonder if it's the same as mine. But because the one thing I will say is, I think this would have worked better if there was a line earlier that gave him the inspiration to say that. I think that's why it doesn't work, because it comes out of nowhere and it's totally out of character. But there is a moment where Bjorn says bitch offhandedly when Andy is getting in his face and trying to stop Navarro from getting onto the ship. And I feel like that maybe at one point the line was more directly in the movie and they cut it.
Mm. What do you think, BJ?
So my theory is that the line was always get away from her, because this is the moment where Andy is overcoming being kind of meek and somewhat passive and like taking a more active role in defending Rain. And I think they had him say like, you bitch, after the fact, which is why there's that pause. And also Andy as like a character is not like a casually swearing type, which is why it sounds so weird when he says it. And I think that was like David Johnson being a very good actor and being like, it's unnatural for him to say you bitch, so I'm going to say it as unnatural as humanly possible. I think the line was just get away from her, and like that was going to be the reference so that it wasn't so on the nose. And then I think somebody in a studio was like, but if it doesn't say you bitch, they won't get that it's a reference.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like maybe a plausible theory to me. I really felt like whatever it is, secondhand, thirdhand embarrassment, whatever the proper term is there. I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe
David Johnson, innocent.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have no idea if this is a fair comparison or not, because I've not seen the movies that I'm about to mention. But Brad, I thought about you a couple times during this movie, because while I was watching it, I wondered, is this what Brad feels like when watching the late period Ghostbusters movies? Like, I know that this is very different tonally than those films, but even with these issues that we're talking about, I still like the movie for the most part and was able to sort of overlook some of these things, even as egregious as they are, because I was really digging the rest of the movie. I was wondering what you thought about that. Does that feel like a somewhat accurate comp to you, or am I way off base there?
No, 100%, especially when it comes to Afterlife. Actually, this movie shares a lot of like structural DNA in a way with Afterlife, and like we mentioned before, Force Awakens, just kind of like how it provides a similar like story and growth, and like puts a new character at the center of the story. And you know, like in Afterlife, you also have them bringing back Harold Ramis as Egon Spengler as mm-hmm. a ghost, you know, even though he had passed away by the time that happened. So yeah, very much I see the similarities there. I think that I maybe was less frustrated with how it played out in Alien Romulus with the inclusion of Rook slash Ash than I was bringing Egon into the fray as a ghost at the end of Afterlife. It's somehow... even though it was distracting as far as like visuals are concerned, it didn't feel like it was too egregious to like really like make me hate that aspect, because by the end of Ghostbusters Afterlife I was really frustrated with how it ended, even though I really loved the first two thirds of the movie. And whereas with Alien Romulus I'm pretty like happy with it pretty much all the way through, right up until the end.
Okay. Chris, I want to talk to you about the ending. Like, I kind of love the swing for the fences idea of injecting the Prometheus black goo and creating this human xenomorph hybrid. But for me, like, the design of that creature was so goofy and the monster was so ineffectual that I felt like it wasn't really scary or threatening and instead started to feel a little bit silly. But you said that you really liked the third act of this movie and where it goes. So I was wondering if that worked better for you than it did for me.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I don't love the design. It's okay. I don't think it's like awful or like, and I appreciate that they actually cast a gigantic man in that role, like instead of just making it all CGI. But I appreciate how, for lack of a better term, weird it is that, you know, this, you know, there's this whole thing where someone is giving birth to this gigantic human alien hybrid, which, you know, and like BJ said earlier, like I wish the movie had been more like that from the jump. And I don't even disagree with BJ that I do think people would not like it, but mm-hmm. I would like it. Like, I can only worry about myself, and I'm the one who wanted to like this. And so I wish the movie had more swings like that. I like it. I just feel like it's kind of rushed. It happens really quick. And then there's a big standoff and this movie is filled with really cheap jump scares that really bothered me, where people are just like, they walk into frame and the soundtrack booms. Like, we don't need this. Like, Alien has one of the best jump scares of all time, where Tom Skerritt is in the ventilation system and they're all like, it's right there behind, like that's so well done. And you compare that to the jump scares in this movie where it's literally just something just jumping into frame. And that happens during this sequence at the end where the it's like a close up of the face of the guy, the alien guy, screaming mm-hmm. at her. I'm just like, stop it. So
yeah, when they're hanging down, like when she's hanging down by the asteroid ring or the asteroid belt, yeah. or whatever, is that what you're talking about? Yeah, where, yeah. like it seems like that creature has been defeated in some way, and then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, its face is just right there somehow. Yeah,
I fully yelled, "Oh god damn it!" Like the second it happened, it got me so bad.
So, what did you think about the ending, BJ, and that whole development with the plot?
Oh man, this is what I came for. Like, I am obsessed with this. I am obsessed with the creature. I love this design because this is such a different. Like, there's so many pregnancies and weird, you know, combination human alien hybrid like storylines and things that exist throughout this franchise. I have a piece coming out later today sort of about that. And the thing I love about this is that like we find out that Kay is pregnant beforehand. So this isn't an instance of like, oh, they've injected a woman with, you know, the xenomorph goo and that's what's going to happen and it's going to mutate the baby, or like the sperm was mutated and that's going to cause the thing. It's like, no, the baby's already there. So we're mutating like an embryo or a fetus or whatever stage it's in. Like, we're mutating that already. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that its face is going to end up being more human. Yeah. It's so gross. I love that because they hired, you know, an actual human man, that the body itself is very clearly a man, but then it has like what looks like a vulva, but flat on the front of its mound. So then it's like this weird gender fucked monster. It reminds me a lot of the Wreck Monster, but without boobs. Like, I'm just so obsessed with its design and how creepy it is and its weird back. I love it. I love that she's lactating black goo. That's disgusting and great. I think they could have pushed it a little further. I'm not saying we needed Barbarian, but like, I would have appreciated if we really just went for it at that point.
Oh god.
But like, I'm so obsessed with it because specifically this is the first example of somebody having one of these alien baby hybrids that it is 100%
their fault, that like there's no trickery, there's no anything. She was already pregnant. Rain said, nope, let's not use this black goo. I don't trust it. And she did it anyway. And like that to me is poetry. Beautiful. We finally got somebody where it was not, you know, manipulation in any way, shape or form. She owned that choice. And we as the audience still went, nah, kill it. Nope, 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 nope. Get rid of it. And I love that. I love it. Just adding to the layers of how, as much as the Alien franchise has always also been like very anti-corporation, it has always been pro-abortion.
Yeah, yeah. Brad, what did you think about the design of that creature that pops up there at the end and the way that the movie plays out at the very end like that?
Yeah, no, I really like the design too, because it's clear they borrowed a little bit from like the engineers, but made it a much creepier Slender Man version. You know, it's like Slender Xeno Man, we should call him. And yeah, it's just like I never thought it was silly. Like, it's just so unsettling to look at. Why, like, especially like when it's a close up and like he like opens his mouth and like you see his like weird human teeth. It's just ew. he's just gross. And yeah, I really like just the way he skulks around. And yeah, he's super creepy. And I love that it went there. We've gotten a new xenomorph in pretty much every Alien movie since Aliens. There's always some kind of new variation, and so seeing something like this felt particularly cool. And yeah, I was already enjoying myself very much, and once it got to that point, I was like, oh my god, this is just going to crazy places.
I'm so glad that you mentioned the teeth, because I know I've talked about this on the show before, about like part of why I am so upset by Terminators is because they have human teeth. And I think that's also why I was very into this design. It is specifically the teeth, because the other hybrids that we've seen are definitely more alien, and this having that like jump across the line into the uncanny valley just like really, really works.
Yeah. All right. As we wrap up here, I have a question for anybody who might be able to answer it. And maybe BJ or Brad, since you guys have seen it twice, or maybe Chris, you picked this up on first viewing. Does anyone know exactly what Rook's endgame is in this movie? Like, he tells Andy to take the Prometheus goo back to the human colony. And is the implication that he does that because Rook, and then by extension, Weyland-Yutani, want to quote-unquote perfect humanity, presumably by what, turning them into these evolved organisms that can maybe work 24 hours a day without needing to eat or sleep? Like, what exactly do you think Rook is trying to get at here?
Well, I don't think that he knows what happened with the mouse that they seem to have fixed initially. I don't think that they know that the goo actually changes humans into monsters. Or at least it would if we saw that play out, because he says he tells them, take it back to Jackson mining colony, and in 6 months Weyland-Yutani will come and get it. So I think that they think they've succeeded, because they were attacked in the middle of, like, while they were still doing all these experiments and stuff like that, and I think that they saw what happened with the mouse and they didn't see that it turned into that weird monstrosity and died. So as far as he's concerned, the vials they have are going to do what Peter Weyland always wanted and make humans basically invulnerable. And he doesn't know that, like, what the consequences are going to be after that.
Huh. Because I assumed, because Rook was, I guess, on that ship for longer, you know, he clearly got, whatever, sliced in half and powered down in some way. But I just assumed, because he was there, he must have, if he's introducing that rat footage to Rain and Andy, I assume he would have seen that footage beforehand, or at least like analyzed the test results or something. So it just seems weird that he wouldn't have been aware of the fact
that there isn't footage of the rat changing. We see it ourselves.
There is a very brief moment where you, in the footage, you do see the mouse start to have some weird growth pop out of its back. I actually, now that you say that, Ben, I do think that there is a line that he says that he wants to bring it back so that they can perfect it. So maybe they are aware and they just plan on fixing it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. I was a little confused about that after first viewing, but
yeah, either way, the end game is absolutely that Weyland-Yutani wants to be able to create their own drones. Like, that's what they want, but they want them to be human drones and not xenomorph drones.
By the way, on that note, there was a really amusing background line that I noticed early on in the movie when when Rain is first waking up, and there's a voiceover speaker that's talking about, if you have a fever, you know, blah, blah, don't go. And it says, safety and well-being of the company is our first priority. Not the employees, the company.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. There's some really good stuff in this movie. I guess as we're approaching the end here, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you all wanted to bring up? Like, Chris, is there anything, whether positive or negative, that either struck you the right way or bugged you or whatever that we didn't touch on yet?
I do like that this is pretty self-contained. I do like it did not end with, like, now we're setting it up for the sequel. I guess you can't really do that because the sequel is technically Aliens. Like, there already is a sequel. But I kind of like that he didn't, like, try to shoehorn in something else. Like, I do think this fits pretty well in between Alien and Aliens. Although it does raise kind of questions about, like, Weyland-Yutani and how much they know, because they seem kind of clueless about all this stuff in Aliens. It's like, you feel like they would have a better knowledge of all of this stuff that happened. But I that's, like, nitpicking. But I do like that it's a pretty self-contained movie, like, you know. But
yeah, I think they have it kind of both ways. I feel like if they chose to not make more movies in this period, it would be a pretty seamless crossover or passing the baton or whatever to the movie Aliens. But like BJ said, I kind of am interested in the Andy and Rain characters, and like if they want to make another movie where those two characters come back in some way, I feel like you could squeeze in another adventure with them in between, you know, after the events of this movie and in between and before really, Aliens. But
I really just want them to just let Ridley Scott make his third movie. Like that's really what I want. Like, come on.
Yeah, maybe they'll do that. I mean, that would be wild because like the ping-ponging back and forth across the timeline and like educating audiences of like, all right, now this one is back again before this, but it's after this movie. You know, like the education they would have to do to keep people, you know, I guess general audiences or whatever in line and aware.
I think it's safe to say like that third Ridley Scott movie will never happen. And yeah. I'm really bummed out about that because I want it.
Yeah. All right. BJ, anything else that you wanted to mention? Highlights, lowlights, anything in between?
So this is a bit of a controversial take, as I've learned it has been in the last like 48 hours. I love that Navarro gets a face hugger and that it is a character that is not a man, because men typically are the ones that get attacked by face huggers. And I thought that was a very cool change. I also think it adds like a fun little layer of like dismantling gender roles a bit, because Navarro has a shaved head and presents a little bit more like mask. And I was like, that's sick. I really like that. Yeah, thought that was fun. And then I learned very quickly that a lot of people are really unhappy about that choice.
Oh man. Okay. Well, minor controversy brewing there. Brad, anything else from you before we wrap it up?
Great score by Benjamin Wallfish. I want to point that out. I especially liked right from the get-go how the 20th Century Fox fanfare suddenly distorts into like a very creepy string, like that just like completely catches you off guard.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I forgot about that. Yeah, I felt really weird about that because like you don't get the final notes, you don't get the completion of the fanfare, and I was like, I feel
Alien 3 actually does that too, which is
does it? Okay.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah. Right, I was like,
wait, what also does it?
Alien 3 does that too with the 20s.
Oh, I forgot about that. Interesting.
Yeah, which is I love that too. But yeah, cuz it's like a great like mood setter, like shit. Things are about to get real.
Absolutely. Okay, cool. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. We have a ton of Alien Romulus coverage up on slashfilm.com approaching this movie from a bunch of different angles and all sorts of stuff. So I encourage people to go there and check it out. I will link to a few pieces in the show notes, so you can find it directly there. I'll link to Chris's review. And if you want to read that, if you haven't yet, you can find it very, very easily. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really, really, really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all next week.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. lights. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now. Save big.